Chapter 10. Sent him away, she broke out, without knowing what she was saying. The change in Mr. Royal frightened her. All the blood seemed to leave his veins, and against his swarthy pallor the deep lines in his face looked black. Didn't he have time to answer some of those questions last night? He was with him long enough, he said. Charity stood speechless. The taunt was so unrelated to what had been happening in her soul that she hardly understood it. But the instinct of self-defense awoke in her. Who says I was with him last night? The whole place is saying it by now. Then it was you that put the lie into their mouths. Oh, how I've always hated you, she cried. As he had expected a retort in kind, and it startled her to hear her exclamation sounding on through silence. Yes, I know, Mr. Royal said slowly. But that ain't going to help us much now. It helps me not to care a straw what lies you tell about me. If they're lies, they're not my lies. My Bible oath on that, Charity. I didn't know where you were. I wasn't out of this house last night. She made no answer, and he went on. Is it a lie that you were seen coming out of Miss Hatchard's nigh on to midnight? She straightened herself with a laugh, all her reckless insolence recovered. Didn't look to see what time it was. You lost girl. Oh, my God, why did you tell me, he broke out, dropping into his chair, his head bowed down like an old man's. Charity's self-possession had returned with the sense of her danger. Oh, you suppose I'd take the trouble to lie to you? Who are you, anyhow, to ask me where I go to when I go out at night? Mr. Royal lifted his head and looked at her. His face had grown quiet and almost gentle, as she remembered seeing it sometimes, when she was a little girl, before Mrs. Royal died. Don't let's go on like this, Charity. It can't do any good to either of us. You were seen going into that fellow's house. You were seen coming out of it. I've watched this thing coming, and I've tried to stop it. As God sees me, I have. Ah, it was you, then? I knew it was you that sent him away. He looked at her in surprise. Didn't he tell you so? I thought he understood. He spoke slowly, with difficult pauses. I didn't name you to him. I'd have cut my hand off sooner. I just told him I couldn't spare the horse any longer, and that the cooking was getting too heavy for Verena. I guess he's the kind that's heard the same thing before. Anyhow, he took it quietly enough. He said his job here was about done, anyhow, and there didn't another word pass between us. If he told you otherwise, he told you an untruth. Charity listened in a cold trance of anger. It was nothing to her what the village said. But all this fingering of her dreams. I've told you he didn't tell me anything. I didn't speak with him last night. You didn't speak with him? No. It's not that I care what any of you say, but you may as well know. Things ain't between us the way you think. And the other people in this place. He was kind to me, he was my friend, and all of a sudden he stopped coming, and I knew it was you that done it you. All her unreconciled memory of the past flamed out at him. Oh, I went there last night, to find out what you'd said to him. That's all. Mr. Royal drew a heavy breath. Then if he wasn't there, what were you doing there all that time? Charity, for pity's sake, tell me. I've got to know, to stop their talking. This pathetic abdication of all authority over her did not move her. She could feel only the outrage of his interference. Can't you see that I don't care what anybody says? It's true I went there to see him. And he was in his room, and I stood outside for ever so long and watched him, but I durstn't go in for fear he'd think I'd come after him. She felt her voice breaking, and gathered it up in a last defiance. As long as I live I'll never forgive you, she cried. Mr. Royal made no answer. He sat and pondered with sunken head, his veined hands clasped about the arms of his chair. Age seemed to have come down on him as winter comes on the hills after a storm. At length he looked up. Charity, you say you don't care, but but you're the proudest girl I know, and the last to want people to talk against you. You know there's always eyes watching you. You're handsomer and smarter than the rest, and that's enough. But till lately you've never given them a chance. Now they've got it, and they're going to use it. I believe what you say, but they won't. It was Mrs. Tom Fry seen you going in, and two or three of them watched for you to come out again. You've been with the fellow all day long every day, since he come here. And I'm a lawyer, and I know how hard slander dies. He paused, but she stood motionless, without giving him any sign of acquiescence, or even of attention. He's a pleasant fellow, to talk to. I liked having him here myself. The young man up here ain't had his chances. But there's one thing as old as the hills, and as plain as daylight. If he'd wanted you the right way, he'd have said so. Charity did not speak. It seemed to her that nothing could exceed the bitterness of hearing such words from such lips. Mr. Royal rose from his seat. Here, Charity Royal. I had a shameful thought once, and you've made me pay for it. Isn't that score pretty near wiped out? There's a streak in me I ain't always master of, but I've always acted straight to you but that once. And you've known I would, you've trusted me. For all your sneers and your mockery, you've always known I loved you the way a man loves a decent woman. I'm a good many years older than you, but I'm head and shoulders above this place, and everybody in it, and you know that too. I slipped up once, but that's no reason for not starting again. If you'll come with me, I'll do it. If you'll marry me, we'll leave here and settle in some big town, where there's men, and business, and things doing. It's not too late for me to find an opening. I can see it by the way folks treat me when I go down to Hepburn or Nettleton. Charity made no movement. Nothing in his appeal reached her heart, and she thought only of words to wound and wither. But a growing lassitude restrained her. What did anything matter that he was saying? She saw the old life closing in on her, and hardly heeded his fanciful picture of renewal. Charity, Charity, say you'll do it, she heard emerge, all his lost ears and wasted passion in his voice. Oh, what's the use of all this? When I leave here it won't be with you. She moved toward the door as she spoke, and he stood up, and placed himself between her and the threshold. He seemed suddenly tall and strong, as though the extremity of his humiliation had given him new vigor. That's all, is it? It's not much. He leaned against the door, so towering and powerful that he seemed to fill the narrow room. Then look here, you're right. I've no claim on you, why should you look at a broken man like me? You want the other fellow, and I don't blame you. You picked out the best when you seen it. Well, that was always my way. He fixed his stern eyes on her, and as he had the sense that the struggle within him was at its highest. Oh, you want him to marry you? He asked. They stood and looked at each other for a long moment, eye to eye, with the terrible equality of courage that sometimes made her feel as if she had his blood in her veins. Do you want him to say? I'll have him here in an hour if you do. I ain't been in the law 30 years for nothing. He's hired Carrick Fry's team to take him to Hepburn, but he ain't going to start for another hour. And I can put things to him, so he won't be long deciding. He's soft. I could see that. I don't say you won't be sorry afterward, but, by God, I'll give you the chance to be, if you say so. She heard him out in silence, too remote from all he was feeling, and saying for any sally of scorn to relieve her. As she listened, there flitted through her mind the vision of Liff Hyatt's muddy boot coming down on the white bramble flowers. The same thing had happened now, something transient and exquisite had flowered in her, and as he had stood by, and seen it trampled to earth. While the thought passed through her, she was aware of Mr. Royal, still leaning against the door, but crestfallen, diminished, as though her silence were the answer he most dreaded. I don't want any chance you can give me. I'm glad he's going away, she said. He kept his place a moment longer, his hand on the doorknob. Charity, he pleaded. She made no answer, and he turned the knob and went out. She heard him fumble with the latch of the front door, and saw him walk down the steps. He passed out of the gate, and his figure, stooping and heavy, receded slowly up the street. For a while she remained where he had left her. She was still trembling with the humiliation of his last words, which rang so loud in her ears that it seemed as though they must echo through the village, proclaiming her a creature to lend herself to such vile suggestions. Her shame weighed on her like a physical oppression. The roof and walls seemed to be closing in on her, and she was seized by the impulse to get away, under the open sky, where there would be room to breathe. She went to the front door, and as she did so, Lucius Harney opened it. He looked graver and less confident than usual, and for a moment or two neither of them spoke. Then he held out his hand. "Are you going out?" he asked. "May I come in?" Her heart was beating so violently that she was afraid to speak, and stood looking at him with tear-dilated eyes. Then she became aware of what her silence must betray, and said quickly, "Yes. Come in." She led the way into the dining room, and they sat down on opposite sides of the table, the cruet stand and Japan breadbasket between them. Harney had laid his straw hat on the table, and as he sat there, in his easy-looking summer clothes, a brown tie knotted under his flannel collar, and his smooth brown hair brushed back from his forehead, she pictured him, as he had seen him the night before, lying on his bed, with the tossed locks falling into his eyes, and his bare throat rising out of his unbuttoned shirt. He had never seemed so remote as at the moment when that vision flashed through her mind. "I'm so sorry it's goodbye. I suppose you know I'm leaving," he began, abruptly and awkwardly. She guessed that he was wondering how much she knew of his reasons for going. "I presume you found your work was over quicker than what you expected," she said. "Well, yes, that is, no. There are plenty of things I should have liked to do. But my holiday's limited, and now that Mr. Royal needs the horse for himself, it's rather difficult to find means of getting about. There ain't any too many teams for hire around here," she acquiesced, and there was another silence. "These days here have been awfully pleasant. I wanted to thank you for making them so," he continued, his color rising. She could not think of any reply, and he went on. "You've been wonderfully kind to me, and I wanted to tell you. I wish I could think of you as happier, less lonely. Things are sure to change for you by and by. Things don't change at North Dormer. People just get used to them." The answer seemed to break up the order of his prearranged consolations, and he sat looking at her uncertainly. Then he said, with his sweet smile, "That's not true of you. It can't be." The smile was like a knife thrust through her heart. Everything in her began to tremble and break loose. She felt her tears run over, and stood up. "Well, goodbye," she said. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.